Welcome to Sports Girls Podcast, brought to you by sportstalk.ie. Check out gemevents.ie, candy carts, chocolate fountains, selfie mirrors. We got all your party needs covered at gemevents.ie. healthandfitnessireland.net. We put you back in control of your health, fitness, nutritional and well-being needs through education, advice and motivation. Check out healthandfitnessireland.net. Looking to dance the night away? Check out thelols.ie, the perfect sound for your next wedding, party or function. Great set lists, lively and sure crowd pleasers. Hello and welcome to this week's Sports Girls Podcast. I'm Denise O'Flaherty, and joining me this evening is our resident expert, Lauren Guilfoyle. Lauren, as you know, works in the media and is also a physiotherapist amongst her many talents. We are also delighted to welcome on the show this week nutritionist Kate McDade. So, Lauren, we got some great news today. Hurling and camogie are recognised as key elements of Ireland's living heritage, and they are to be safeguarded for future generations. It's great to see that.
Absolutely. I think it kind of rubber stamps everything that we already thought. But I suppose to get a bit of recognition from an international perspective is really, really nice. Hopefully it might lead to maybe some extra funding, maybe from a national perspective here in Ireland, but it's great. I know there was talks of this happening over the past few weeks, but the news came out today that they had been granted that status. So it's fantastic. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Speaking of the camogie, club finals time of the year, we look back, Lauren, on last weekend's camogie finals. You were at both games. The Junior A final was won by Kilmessan of Meath. They defeated Roscommon's Four Roads on a scoreline of 3-12 to 1-12. And it was actually double delight for Meath clubs as Rathoath beat Clontibret of Monaghan 1-12 to 3 points to claim the Junior B title.
Yeah, there were two fantastic games. The Junior final between Four Roads and Kilmessan was probably one of the best camogie games I've seen all year. And I suppose there were two counties involved that wouldn't be traditional camogie counties. So I didn't really know what to expect going up to these games. I hadn't seen any of these clubs playing before, but I was blown away, especially by the style of play that the two Meath clubs came with, Kilmessan and Rathoath. But fantastic to see Clontibret there representing Monaghan. I suppose they're probably used to seeing Conor McManus and their footballers in action, but to see their camogie team out as well. It's fantastic. Like, it's the first year of that particular Junior B competition. So it's kind of after setting a fairly good standard. I suppose the scoreline doesn't overly reflect that. Rathoath made use of a very, very strong wind in the first half and got a good few scores on the board. It was very even though for the second half. So I think Clontibret can be pretty proud of their efforts on the day. And the wind and the rain seemed to go away for the second game, which is fantastic. And it allowed a really, really skillful second game between Four Roads and Kilmessan. Really, really neck and neck until about maybe the 51st or 52nd minute, where Kilmessan kind of pushed on, and they had a 5-point lead. Four Roads came back and equalised, and Kilmessan pushed on again and won by 6. And as I was saying earlier, like, the standard of Mogi, the style of play of Meath Mogi is really, really positive. It's really forward, really attacking, trying to hit balls into hands, trying to, I suppose, run the ball as opposed to maybe using physicality. And Kilmessan, fantastic. They had a girl there, corner forward, Megan Pine. She would have played with the Meath camogie team this year. She grabbed, I think it was a 2-2 in that game. She was absolutely fantastic. Her goals were out of this world, and I hope maybe they're released as short clips. And as I was saying, it's probably one of the best camogie games I've seen all year. A really, really nicely contested game, and I suppose that's Kilmessan's second year in a row winning the Junior A title. So the Meath winners next year, be it Kilmessan, maybe it could be Rathoath, they're going to play at the intermediate grade next year, which is fantastic for Meath camogie as a whole. I know their senior camogie team didn't fare out too well this year in the senior grade, but I suppose getting their club teams playing at a higher level is only going to help them.
Yeah, and as you said, it's great to see those counties in there, because they're not, is inverted commas, you know, there wouldn't be traditional camogie counties. This weekend we have the ladies footballers, and they're out on Saturday evening. There's actually great value for money for anyone who is in Dublin. There's a double header in Parnell Park. Dublin's Fox Rock Cabinteely take on Mourne Abbey from Cork in the senior final at 5 p.m.
And both teams, fantastic clubs, but neither side have actually won this title. So history will be made. A couple of weeks ago on the show, Diana Hora and Gemma Begley from Tyrone actually predicted this to be the final. And it was kind of hard to pick a winner, but they just feel that Foxrock Cabinteely might just get that elusive Dol Ireland.
Yeah, so I suppose Warren Abbey are coming with an awful lot of experience into this final. They were beaten in 2014, 2015 and 2017, so they have an awful lot of hurt in the locker that was they'll want to come out the right side this year. I haven't seen Foxrock play this year. I have seen Warren Abbey. I saw them in the Cork replay. They beat West Cork quite considerably, and to be honest, they're so clinical up front. Like, they can make it from the full back line to the full forward line, maybe three or four passes. Really, really clinical. That the O'Sullivan, Dern and Kira. I know Dern won the November Player of the Month. She's been scoring all around her. I think she got something like the 2-4 in the club final, 8 points against Kilkerran, and she got 9 points in the Munster final. Like, she's in absolutely sensational form. So as I said, I haven't seen Foxtrot 17 today, but I suppose they had quite a nice win in that semi-final.
You know, it was a great win for Fox Rock, and when you look at their squad, you know, with the Dublin players there, I'm just going to say something to you though, and you know, when your county is doing well and when your clubs are doing well, you know, kind of those two things go together, because your senior final is between the Dublin representatives and the Cork representatives, and that's what your ladies' final was this year, Cork versus Dublin.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're going to see some absolutely fantastic footballers on display, and players that have played at the highest level, battling it out in Parnell Park is a fantastic venue, especially on a Saturday evening as well. So it's really reshaping up to be an excellent final, and as you said, it's going to be new winners. So I think it's going to be a huge outpouring of emotion. It's just a case of seeing which sharpshooters they want to get out on top.
Are you going to that game? You probably are, because it's Moore Abbey from Cork.
I'm actually not going this weekend. No, I've been all over the face of work for the last couple of weekends. I have another event, so I won't make it. But I'm hoping to catch it on TV anyway.
Right, and then 7 o'clock, because normally you have your intermediate or your junior final preceding the senior final, but this time around it's actually at 7 o'clock. It's Dublin's Clontarf are up against Emmet Oak from Monaghan in the intermediate final, and that's actually a first All Ireland final for both those teams, so it's going to be a special occasion for them.
Absolutely, and yeah, it is a bit strange that you're having the intermediate final after them. Not sure the thought process around that, but again, it's regardless of it being an intermediate final, I'm sure every player going into any kind of All Ireland, I saw it last week in the Camogie final, doesn't matter what grade it's at, if you can go out and win an All Ireland medal, it doesn't mean as much as anything else.
Yeah, and then on Sunday we have another Cork team. Cork's Glanmire are actually playing Turlestrand from Sligo, and that's in the junior final. That's in Bannisloe. The throw-in there is at 2:30, and just like the intermediate final, this is a first for both sides. They're competing in their first All Ireland final, and no club from Sligo have won this competition. So Turlestrand have a chance of creating history.
Absolutely, and Glanmire, I suppose, wouldn't be a very football-dominant part of Cork. But I suppose, given the successes of Cork senior football teams over the last few years, they've been pretty dominant in the senior football grade. Like, it's only growing the interest around Cork City. So I'm not surprised to see someone like Glanmire popping up there at the All-Ireland stage, having gone through that campaign. And I suppose Turlestrand, like, they haven't been at this stage either, so it's a case of maybe settle the nerves a little bit more on the day to see who comes out on top there.
Now I'd like to welcome our guest, nutritionist Kate McDade, onto the show. Kate works with the Longford men's Gaelic football team and the Dublin ladies Gaelic football team, as well as other teams and individuals. She's a lady of many talents, so welcome aboard, Kate.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, listen, no problem. You know, anything we can do, and especially for you know, someone who's working with bowl codes and so many sporting people. RTE Today Girls released a list for their sports person of the year, a really, really long list, but it's great to see Dublin ladies footballer Sinead Ahern on that list. We spoke about her last week on the show. We're talking about the All-Stars, and there are not enough superlatives to describe the athlete that she is. Kate, obviously from working with the Dublin team, you get to know what Sinead is like.
Yeah, well, like, for me, Sinead was just such a pleasure to work with. Really such a strong role model, and I suppose The success of the ladies, you know, it's down to a number of things, but definitely having role models like Sinead on the team and like leading the way is just, you know, really speaks volumes about how the girls have come on. You know, she was such an easy person to work with. Her communication and working with me, working with management, as kind of a medium between, you know, making sure everyone's voices were heard and everyone was singing off the same hymn sheet. And then in terms of her work ethic and the pitch and the encouragement she has for her teammates and for what she stands for is just phenomenal. I suppose coming from a sporting background myself, basketball being my sport, Sinead's kind of the person you hope you get in your team. You know, she's what every team needs, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Lauren, there's so many females on that list, which is great to see. And it's fantastic to see Sinead there. You know, there's other ones there that more than likely, I think Johnny Sexton seems to be the favourite to win it. But it is great to see someone like Sinead O'Hearn being recognised.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose she's had a stellar 2 years, like back-to-back All-Ireland titles, and I suppose having such a high-scoring tally over the past 2 years. She is Dublin captain, so I suppose it isn't a huge shock that she is there. But like when you look at how successful Irish sport has been this last year, it's probably a really tough list to actually even get your name onto. I think it's been one of the most successful years of Irish sports, definitely in terms of individual Irish sports this year. So to be in amongst those, I'm sure she's absolutely delighted. I know if you spoke to her, she'd probably say that it's all about the team and getting the All-Ireland medal as part of the Dublin panel. But I suppose at the end of the year, this time of year, those individual awards, I'm sure no one would say no to.
Exactly. So Kate, it's now your turn for us to grill you. Sorry about this. You know, as I mentioned, you know, you work with a lot of sports people, individual teams, but the two teams that you do work with would be two inter-county teams as well. It would be the Longford team and the Dublin team. Actually, this year, probably back earlier than before because of the O'Byrne Cup. So early this year.
Yeah. we missed out in a couple of weeks preparation, but yeah, like as in, it's a pleasure to be back with the lads again for the second season now. You know, you never really know what you're getting yourself into when you start with a new team, you know, a new backroom set up and stuff like that. There's so many different personalities and, you know, you never know kind of, yeah, what's going to unfold. But, like, they were such a pleasure to work with last year. So, you know, I was buzzing to be back again with them this year. And, you know, there's a real, real nice buzz amongst them. And we're all just really looking forward to the season now, I think, at this stage.
The differences, or are there differences working with the men's team and working with the women's team?
Well, like, you'd be dealing with different personalities. Like, I suppose, you know, they each have their own flavour to them, which is nice. So it's very much you're walking into two very different setups. But I suppose the fundamentals are the same in the sense that, you know, they both work extremely hard. They have a really tight kind of knit amongst them as teammates. There's a nice kind of feel, you know, as part of our kind of backroom team as well. So, yeah, like there's differences but similarities. I suppose as a practitioner, maybe the way you relay information might be slightly different to men as it would be to females. But
in one ear.
Yeah, but overall, like, you know, it's kind of really important for me to get to know them all as individuals. Yes, to have a feel for the team as a group, but I try and get to know each of the players because at the end of the day, we're teams looking towards the same goal, but you're dealing with a group of 30, 40 individuals as well, so it brings its differences.
Where are you at in terms of your accessibility to maybe supplements, even just for team contact? Because I know like I would have worked with Tipperary senior footballers on and off over the past year or so, and they would have had a full-time nutritionist there, and I would have seen how she works with the team, and then I would have gone back to maybe rugby teams or underage hurling teams and seeing maybe that where there's a huge scope for a nutritionist, but we don't obviously have that access.
Yeah, so it definitely depends on, you know, kind of what team you are working with, what their budget is like, and like I do, irrespective of kind of budget side of things, you know, I really do try and immerse myself as best I can with the group and let them know that I am there, as you know, for them. Should I, like, the last thing I'd hate to think, and this goes outside of my sporting clients, would hate to have someone there in a muddle over something so, you know, small that I could fix in a second. It does depend. I suppose, like with the lads, it would be extremely hands-on. Like it would be, it's almost like full-time role without being living in their pocket. But and with the girls, again, it's you know, I mightn't have as much access to them, or I wouldn't be as maybe as much as at their training sessions. But I'd definitely be at all the championship games, and that would be my role with the ladies. Supplements, again, like my main focus would be on getting kind of the basics right with both groups. So supplements are kind of down the priority list, but again, it's down to kind of what the resources are to that team. And even with that, you're working within kind of, well, what's actually going to benefit this group of players? Like, it's the same with the strategies you use. It's kind of knowing where the group is at and how much contact do they really need, or how much information are they going to benefit from. So I think that's why, again, going back to rapport and getting a good sense of the environment that you're in is really, really important. So I can kind of deliver the most relevant and kind of most effective information to that group.
Listen, I want to get Kate McDade on board. I give you a call, you come down to either a football team or an individual, or what way do you work, or which do you prefer? What would you do? Is it different from working with, I suppose, a football team is a gang of people compared to individuals, but if you go down the first meeting, you know, from start and then how you progress, what way do you go about that?
Yeah, so again, it depends on kind of how much time I'm, you know, or what kind of constraints from, you know, kind of what part of the season the team are in and what the manager wants, like, because managers will have their own ideas too, you know, and sometimes you're working within kind of their timeline. Ideally, like, well, for a lot of groups, it would start off with kind of, it can start off with body composition analysis, so whether that's DEXA scans or I take skin fold measurements from time to time to see where the lads, the girls are at. It could just be a case of delivering a presentation and then, you know, doing a Q&A for someone else who only wants you in here and there. But for more long term, you'd probably start with body composition. Again, going back to working with people on an individual basis to really see benefit, or to kind of give everyone the best shot at progressing. I'd organise one-to-one consultation. So again, depending on what's available to you, that could be, you know, before training, we'll just meet a little bit earlier. Maybe we'll stay after training, or else it's organising phone calls during the week and getting to know the players that way, and tap into what their lives are like and see what little changes you can make. The kind of body composition analysis can, and as well liaising with the strength and conditioning coach and the rest of management to see what they want from particular players. And kind of discussing that with the players so everyone has a clear understanding where they're at. And with that, I'd probably progress down with individual feedback. You know, you might give out some information on a team level, they're more so reminders or the real basic stuff, just everyone's on the same page. And yeah, it kind of progresses from there, whether it's presentation throughout the season, you know, or consultations every few weeks. It really just depends, but I would like to kind of keep as close contact with players, or at least let them know that I'm available there for them. Even if I'm not at training, you know, that they can get in touch on my phone or email or whatever it might be. So yeah, and you just kind of work that way and make sure that with the change in season, so going from pre-season into the beginning of the league onto championship, that, you know, everyone is, their nutrition is progressing with the progression of the season, and everyone knows what's to be done. And you know, sometimes my role involves making sure that food's there for the team after training sessions, after matches, you know, making sure that supplements are there, or any of the kind of halftime necessities that might be needed for matches. So, you know, that's kind of how your role progresses. But it's really just making sure that everyone is getting the attention and, you know, on the page they need to be throughout.
Isn't it amazing how football has evolved and progressed in the last number of years? Because first we had the strength and condition, and now nutrition, and having a nutritionist as part of a background team is such an important role for you.
Yeah, no, it's like, it is amazing. Like, I think a few years ago, people probably wouldn't have believed it would have come up the way it has. And not because it doesn't deserve to be there. Like, I think it's amazing that, you know, people realise that it does have such an important role to play, you know, from a performance perspective. Now it's not just kind of relying solely on training, and obviously that's extremely, extremely important. But, you know, to look at the picture as a whole, you know, I know some teams as well have psychologists on board, like, you know, and it's really phenomenal that, because for years, I think particularly in the Gaelic scene now, you know, hurlers, camogie players, football players, you know, they train like elite level athletes. And it's really nice to see that, you know, they're kind of getting the care that they need to now, and it's, you know, clubs and county level are able to do that now, and it's thankfully filtering into the women's side of things too, which is massive. Still got a long way to go, but it's definitely moving in the right direction. And I suppose you know, with the, definitely the girls have gotten a lot more recognition now, which is really, really great. Like, and long may it last, and long may it continue to grow.
I have to say now, this year, I know Longford had a different trainer as well, and I'm not just saying it because you're here, that our fitness level, our, you know, games that were energy sapping didn't sap the energy out of Longford like they had in the past. I just noticed how their fitness levels as the game went by, or even as the year went by, how fit they were and how well prepared they were.
Yeah, no, like, if growing off last year, like, the, you know, we had a great setup in the sense that, like, you know, the lads were week in, week out, like, they worked extremely, extremely hard, whether that was on the pitch or in the gym. And S&C that was in last year, like, you know, really set a high standard, as did any of the trainers out on the pitch. And thankfully, you know, the lads saw value in what I was trying to achieve as well, and, you know, they really kind of bought into it, and, you know, they reaped the rewards of that. Particularly, you know, when the season kind of gets a bit deeper, and, you know, you've had weeks and months of hard training and hard games, and you know, that's when you can start to pick up injuries and things like that. But no, they were really well prepared and a really good attitude, and yeah, their hard work seemed to stand to them, which was great. So again, we've a really, really good setup now this year too. We've new kind of coaching staff, new S&C and all that on board. But so far, like, it's just been excellent. Like, the standard is still extremely high, and it just, there's a really, really nice vibe about it. So, you know, when fresh faces and stuff come in, it can be a nice lift as well. So, yeah, so as I said, like we're buzzing to see what this season can bring, and
fingers crossed. Lauren, would you like to work with a nutritionist, you know, as a player yourself?
Absolutely. Like I don't have any experience as a player or as a physio, like to have a working relationship with a nutritionist. I suppose from a physio perspective, it just popped into my mind there as you were speaking, Kate. Like, do you have, like, is there any maybe recommendations from a dietary point of view of maybe like changes in dietary requirements when a player is injured? Obviously, the short-term injuries, maybe muscle injuries, whereas you might have long-term injuries like a fracture or maybe an ACL tear. Like, is there anything that you, I know it's obviously going to be very gross in terms of it's going to be very general, but is there any maybe nuggets of advice you might have?
Yeah, no, and I think that kind of it's why it's so important for a backroom team to work closely together, because there's definitely kind of nutritional interventions that I can put in place to help an athlete. Now, you mentioned it there yourself, like it will depend greatly on kind of the severity of the injury and you know, kind of what's happened. But yeah, it would depend. So, you know, often people think, oh, injured, like I've reduced the amount of kind of energy I'm burning and I'm not training as much, like I need to reduce my calorie intake massively, when sometimes, and particularly if an athlete's gone into surgery or whatever, really what they need to do is increase their calorie intake for a certain period to make sure recovery is happening as efficiently as it can. So again, you know, protein intake is a really important one. Keeping the athlete healthy, making sure that their immune system and that their energy intake is where it needs to be is really important. That goes across, like obviously depending on what the injury is, it will vary how big or small those changes need to be, but it's definitely something that needs to be looked at and addressed with. And then you've got, that's where kind of supplements can come in sometimes. You know, creatine is quite a good one in terms of recovery. So again, assessing whether the need is there for that with the player. So it definitely has a large role to play, and I'd work quite closely with the S&Cs as I mentioned, but also with both physios on the Longford team and on the Dublin setup too. You know, and they'll let me know because I won't be at every training, so I'll always have a message or some form of contact being like, this player, you know, this has happened to this player, get on to them or whatever. And it's really important that we do have that relationship so that the players are looked after the way they should be.
And across the year, I suppose, does your maybe advice or recommendations change from maybe pre-season training to maybe in-season, and then you're looking at cold weather and very hot weather like we had last year?
Yeah, no, definitely. So like at the moment we're in the height of pre-season, so what I'm trying to do with the men, that is, so what I'm trying to do now is just again instill positive habits. I'm working with different lads on their body composition, so some are looking to increase their muscle mass, so that will require certain demands. Others are looking to maybe trim down a little bit, and then others are maintaining where they're at, or trying to maximize what they're getting from all the pre-season work. So at the moment you're kind of focusing on preparing and maximizing all the work that's going in, so that they're as prepared as possible going into the league and in the best shape possible going into the league. And I suppose coming up now to the O'Byrne Cup, we'll really focus on kind of instilling habits around fueling. Like I've been working a lot on recovery at the moment with the lads, but we'll be focusing more so on fueling and kind of just making sure that they're kind of picking up things and bringing it along with them as the season progresses. You'd look then at kind of preparing for games, also, and then maintaining and returning back to principles that we've touched on as the season progresses, kind of bringing a new flavour, keeping the guys thinking. Like, one thing I like to do is try and get them involved in terms of the meals and stuff that they can do away from training, because it's great that, you know, they get training after, or they get fed after training, and they'll get take-home meals as well from time to time, which helps them massively in terms of, like, you can imagine when you're training quite intensely and quite a few times a week, and sometimes that involves travel for the lads, and to have meals in there looked after, sorted for you, helps massively. So then, but obviously that's not looking after all the meals of the week, so getting them involved as a group, setting the standards that way in terms of throwing in their own meal ideas, what they've done, and, you know, keeping some kind of interest and reminders that way. You touched on the weather there, like last summer we were blessed with the weather, but I don't know how blessed the lads felt when they were running around. And so again, from that perspective, in games, like even if it wasn't hot, there is a big focus on hydration, and, you know, maintaining your hydration status while playing. And then obviously with the change in the weather, it's really, the emphasis is even more so on that. You know, with an increase in temperature as well, you're looking at a greater demand for carbohydrates, and so, you know, that has to be something that's addressed and looked at too. And you have to make sure that all the lads or the girls are aware of that. I suppose this time of year as well, because it is, the weather's drastically changing, and we haven't been too fortunate with between rain and wind and cold, you know, immunity is a big one. So again, making sure that people are staying healthy throughout the season, because obviously the last thing you want is people you know, being run down and not being able to train, and or maybe picking up niggles and stuff. So really important to look at factors like that as well. Yeah,
isn't it amazing, you know, just from talking to you, I wouldn't have realised how important your role is and all the different areas that you have to look at with players now, like even the weather. And I knew, you know, what Lauren was saying about eating, you know, with injuries and how important it is, you know, with certain injuries. But just in everything about it, you know, you're telling the lads what to eat, you know, or what to take coming up to when the weather is good or when the weather is bad. You know, this has really opened my eyes to what a nutritionist does with a football team.
Yeah, no, it is pretty, like, you know, it is, there's a lot to think about, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good you can add. Our role is quite varied, it's quite vast. There's a lot of kind of areas that you need to kind of be mindful of, and make sure the lads are too. And actually, just speaking of mindfulness, like, you know, making sure that the lads stay and, you know, keep their mood is maintained. Again, a lot of that will stem from if they're eating enough, if they're you know, recovering as they should, if they're getting enough sleep. Like, so there's a lot of areas that you can kind of dip into and educate people on to better their performance as a human and as an individual, and then obviously as an athlete too. There's plenty to be doing.
Yeah, because you mentioned the sleep thing, and I know that for some people, if they don't get enough sleep, they get cravings during the night, or if you don't eat at a certain time, your blood sugar levels drop and you can get moody or cranky. And it is amazing how important, you know, food is for our moods, for everything about us.
Yeah, no, it is like, and I don't think we realise that sometimes until we're actually made to think about it. Like, you know, there's plenty of other factors that will feed into our mood also, other than the food we eat. But it does have a role, and even from a concentration perspective, you know, sometimes people feel like, you know, a little bit sluggish at certain points of the day. Like, sometimes that can be down to, well, what was your last meal made up of? So again, even your food from a perspective of sleep, like, you know, I don't know, a myth that's gone around the block a few times is, you know, no carbs after a certain time in the evening. And really, carbohydrates can actually benefit your sleep quality and getting to sleep. So, you know, it does have a role to play in many facets of our life, but just by making people acknowledge that and aware of that.
I suppose it's a question you've been asked so many times, the difference mm-hmm. between a nutritionist and a dietitian.
Yes. So a nutritionist, it's not a protected title. So Denise, if you're feeling like you want to go down the nutritionist route, you could, and you could declare yourself a nutritionist if you like. Many people on social media do as it is. a dietitian is a protected title. It would be a lot more clinical. You do, I suppose, the thing with a dietitian is, well, you work within your governing body. So sometimes that can be quite limiting in the sense that, the regulations aren't as up to date as the research sometimes. So it can sometimes hinder what practices you can use with certain clients, because obviously you can't work outside of certain boundaries. Whereas with the nutritionist, like, I can very much kind of work with the latest research and not really have to worry if I know it's going to help my client and it is the best solution for them. Dietitian as well, a lot more kind of, there's a guarantee that you'll have a job, which is nice, a nice kind of reassurance for a lot of people. So they would be kind of the differences. And I do a few talks in schools, and, you know, that's what students would be asking me in particular. So if there's anyone out there listening that wants to go down the nutritionist route, I probably would recommend going down maybe the dietetic route, and then go on to do your master's in maybe sports nutrition or human nutrition. But you can still work part-time if you want while you do the master's, or you know that if all fails, you can go down the dietetics route and you know that there's a job there for you.
Lauren, you work with the youth in the GAA. Do you think from a young age, you know, getting them to learn about nutrition and something like that, getting it into their minds, would actually help?
Oh, absolutely. I think young people have such a desire to learn.
Yeah.
I guess the age that we work with in the GAA Youth Committee is 12 to 21, so there's a huge age range there. And you've an age range that's probably kind of bridging the gap between secondary school and college, where they do have full control over their nutrition, I suppose, and they do leave to go off to college. I think there's a huge opening to educate and provide knowledge around, well, what should we be eating on a normal day-to-day basis, and then maybe in preparation for sport or activity. We have given some workshops over the past 3 years at the Youth Forum in terms of nutrition and diet, kind of a basic enough 40-minute workshop. Obviously, we don't have weeks upon weeks to maybe impart the knowledge that they probably would want or would like to have. But I think there is a real desire there, because in this day and age, and this day and age of social media, we're, the fitness bug or the fitness fad, it's not going away. And everyone wants to become fitter. Everyone wants to be better, perform better, look better. So I think now more than ever, people, especially of a younger age, are looking to know, well, what's going to give me the edge, or what's going to make my training in the gym pay off that little bit more. And I suppose as well, on the flip side of that, though, we're probably being fed an awful lot of maybe negative or misinformation.
Pardon the pun.
I'd love to hear your opinion. Exactly. I'd love to hear your opinion on that, Kayla. I suppose we've seen over the last couple of weeks, like the Kardashians promoting the skinny flat tummy tea, and I just think it's scandalous, but like, that's kind of what we're up against, and you're trying to feed young people the correct information. So it's trying to get the outlet or the opportunity to give to them is probably the problem.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, and I think the thing with nutrition is, like, the fundamentals of it, like, it's really quite simple and basic. And I think, you know, these kind of teas or magic bullets and stuff, like, they're so much more exciting to people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they give people a buzz. They, you know, they'll throw in all this lingo that no one really understands. And for a lot of time, it actually doesn't make sense. But, you know, it sounds good. It's buzzy. And you know, there is kind of a lot of people out there who are more than happy to push X, Y, and Z, and they act as if it's going to cure everything. But I suppose, like, as like a practitioner, like, what you look to do is relate to the audience that you're dealing with, you know, and kind of demonstrate how easy the changes are that they can make. Like, I go into schools quite a bit, so dealing with the age group you're speaking of there, Lauren, and it's like showing them easy swaps that they can make to better their performance, you know, whether that's on the pitch, on a track or wherever it might be, on a basketball court, and you're trying to, you know, tap into maybe something that they relate to. Another great way to do it, I found, is so for talks that I do for School Digest, so they focus around the kind of adolescent nutrition, is we'd do a tasting table. So it's all well and good for me to say, oh, swap this for that and whatever. Like, sometimes they'll be looking at you being like, what is she getting me to eat here? Like, I've never tried that, nor do I have any intention. But then when they actually, when you have it in front of them, let them try it, they're like, actually, that's real nice. Like, I could see myself eating that. So, it's trying to make your information as relatable, and, you know, try and figure out kind of what is going to raise the interest of the group that you're talking to. But yeah, there's definitely like an onslaught of poor information out there, like, and it's you know, it's disappointing, but I don't know, I hope, like, all you can really do is, my position anyway, is just try and keep putting out decent content, and, you know, and making it as practical and as tangible so that people actually can take something from it.
You were talking about meals earlier on, about, you know, sometimes the lads get meals. And a big thing I've noticed now is that a lot of players are coming out with food companies. And one person in particular will be Philly McMahon, the Dublin player. There is a huge business for that now, whereas these meals are prepared for players that kind of, you know, that don't really want to kind of sit down and organise something for themselves. So they have them delivered, or they're able to buy them, and then they can get whatever they need.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great, kind of, that, because people are so busy now. It's like, I don't know, we're kind of, yeah, we're just non-stop for the most part. And, you know, everyone seems to, you know, no matter what your kind of profession is, you know, you're working kind of flat out. And then obviously, then they have to go train and they need to perform again. So for a lot of people, having the access to options like that, ready-made meals that are, you know, nutritious, that supply them with what they need, is great. Like, and if you can afford to do that, excellent. So I suppose for those that can't, it's, you know, my role then would be to, well, what are your options? So what can we look at? Like, where do you shop? What's within your budget? Like, and what's convenient? So, like, if you can do it, it's great. Yeah, and there's definitely a demand for it there. Yeah, definitely.
You know, Lauren was talking about, you know, these fads and the Kardashians and the big names and that. But we also have things here, you know, you've Weight Watchers here in Ireland, Slimming World that people go to. Where would you be in that category? You know, if one of the footballers kind of said to you, you know, I think maybe I need to do something, or even if you wanted to follow one of their plans or something, you know, would you agree with that, or would you prefer to do something yourself? Or
I see a lot of kind of setups like that, like kind of Weight Watchers, and I don't want to get myself into trouble here, but I'm just But, you know, they kind of look at, you know, you've got your sins and you've got your foods that you can stick to and foods that you shouldn't have and this, that and the other. And I think while you can, you know, get or reach kind of some goals or get some sort of progression by cutting out certain foods, what you're doing is you're cutting out calories. But you're not really being told that. Like, I kind of resent the whole kind of demonizing foods, because I think it's really important to understand, you know, well, A, have a clear sense of what are you trying to achieve there, and then understanding how you're going about that. So for things like Slimming World, they're getting you to cut out certain foods like that might have been a big part of your diet. So you're cutting calories, so that's why you're going to lose weight. But then often you'll find that if you plateau and you don't really know what's going on, or maybe you're the person who, oh God, well, I had too many sins today and now I'm terrible, and I don't think it supports that side of things from what I know, just what I've seen. So again, I just think it's really important as a practitioner to really paint the full picture. And like, because I deal obviously with athletes, but then outside of that, with different weight loss clients, it's making them, you know, understand that, okay, well, it's not the end of the world if this is what you have, but it doesn't mean that the rest of the day has to go out the window, or that shouldn't be the makeup of your whole diet. So I suppose it's not demonizing food. It's definitely making people aware of the more nutrient dense sources and what works for them, and, you know, as an individual, and figuring out the best solution for them, as opposed to like a blanket prescription and kind of going good and bad and, you know, yay and nay. I think it's important that people can make informed decisions themselves, and I often find that things like that don't facilitate or don't allow for that.
Yeah, you're mentioning the calories, and I'm going to give him a plug on this. You know him as well, Peter Foy, because Coach Foy, I should give him his proper name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Peter would put up and his Snapchats, and that would be about calories. And I've often seen, you know, he'd be somewhere having a cup of tea, and it could be a muffin or something like that, but he's like, it's all about the calories. And that's where I kind of went, well, do you know that? And, you know, and you've kind of enlightened me as well, because, you know, you're hearing one thing, but then, you're hearing from you that, you know, well, it is about calories and that, and that's the important word. You mentioned basketball. Is that your downtime, or do you still kind of get involved with basketball teams? Do you help the team that you play for, or is it just Kate McDade might finally get some time on her own to relax?
I had a basketball match tonight, but that would be my downtime. That's my relief. I'm an extremely competitive individual. But yeah, so when my basketball season finished last year, I was watching so much football. I was like, I just want to play. So I took up football for the summer months, which was nice because the weather was fabulous. So it was nice to be out in the air. So I try and do, like, I also do a bit of gym work, like, anything like that. Like, I, even with the gym work, like, you might be listening to music, I'll always put my phone on airplane mode, because I spend enough time on my phone. Like, so if I put on airplane mode, I won't check the emails or whatever, and I just try and, you know, use it completely just to have that hour to myself that day or whatever it might be. And I just feel it helps me kind of wash away the kind of any troubles that I had, or makes me think clearer as well, which is great.
Yeah, because you're a busy woman yourself, Lauren. Do you have downtime or me time?
Yeah, I know. I'm fairly busy now. I write, and I think it's kind of a 7-day job in the summer months between physio and physio with TIP and then media duties as well. It's really important to schedule some downtime. I haven't yet hacked how to actually play competitive sports. So Kate, I might get your number after this and we can talk. Because I could absolutely agree, the desire to actually go out and compete and try and push myself physically when I'm helping everyone else to do it. It's definitely burning there towards the end of the summer. But yeah, it's just trying to fit in my own kind of gym work, my own just time to, as you said, off the phone, listen to a podcast instead or something, and just get away from everybody else and kind of help myself for an hour or two. But yeah, I
give my left hand to go back playing camogie. I just haven't somehow figured out how it's possible yet, but I might hack it sometime this year, maybe.
Really? So you're going to make a comeback, are you?
Hopefully now. I stopped playing maybe 3 years ago, and I said this year I went to one of my sister's challenge matches, and I was itching on the sideline, and I went over to the manager, and I was kind of in their ear going, okay, now, you know, I'll see what I can do. And I was into the WhatsApp group anyway, and the following there was another challenge match down, and because I hadn't played in a few years, I could play junior, so I was even more excited, you know, get a good run around. And I'm sure, of course, the following week, one of our TIP minor matches was changed to the Friday, so I couldn't make it to that. And then the Saturday for the intermediate match, I was gone again for media work. So all in all, my plan failed. And yeah, it did never come back into fruition, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it always seems, whatever it is with work always seems to clash, because I was like that after years of not kicking a football. We started with Gaelic for Mothers and Others in Granard. Oh my gosh, I was like a child at Christmas going down to the training sessions, even though after 5 minutes I would have needed the defibrillator, but I was absolutely loving it. But isn't it amazing how something like that can give you a buzz? I suppose, Kate, being around teams, does that kind of give you a buzz in a different sense?
Oh my god, 100%. Like that,
Lauren, actually, sorry for interrupting you, Kate, you should have seen Kate this year when Longford beat Meath. She was smiling. She was a bigger smile than I had on me. Maybe it was because it was me, wasn't it?
I'll say nothing. But yeah, like, as in, you see the players do it firsthand, like all the work they put in, and you know them on a personal level, yeah. And you nearly feel like, as in, that's, like, I'd go in, I'd be with the team before they go out, and this is, like, the men and female, and I'd be like, oh, jeez, like, I wish I was going out on the pitch. Like, you're just buzzing, like, on the sideline. You know, it's just, you are so invested in it. And, you know, that's why when they have nice victories like that, you know, it's everyone's hard work, and, you know, it's just such a lovely feeling. And you're just so happy for the players that, you know, it's like, yes, like, this is what you deserve. Like, this is just fab. So it's a really, really nice feeling. And that's why I'm fortunate in the sense that yes, Lauren, I feel your pain. It's a seven day week. But, you know, for the most part, I often, oh my God, this is my job. Like, that, I am getting paid to do this. So, which is lovely.
Yeah, because you were lucky that you were able to experience Dublin winning in All-Ireland, the ladies this year. But then when you go to Longford, and smaller county, and for us, that was nearly our All-Ireland, you know, beating Meath. So you got to see what it meant for a small county. Now, the last 12 months, you've worked with Dennis Connerton, Mick Bohan, and now Pádraig Davis. How are the three of them? I know Paddy and Dennis very well, but I wouldn't really know Mick. But how are the three of them to deal with? Or I suppose they're quite different as managers.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. You know, they're three different personalities. Mm. There's three different approaches about them. I think I've said it before. They're, like, I have been extremely fortunate with the two teams that, you know, I am working with, in the sense that from everyone, from the backroom staff to the players on the pitch, like, you know, it's just been a pleasure to deal with. Communication's really, really important for me, and kind of the more open the communication is, then the more I know, like, the better I can do my job. So, like, you know, that's worked out quite well for me with those three different managers. And, you know, they have their own flair about them, and, you know, they get what they need to from their players, and that's the main thing. So yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. They have been, all three have been a pleasure to work with, so I'm happy.
Are you back with the ladies again next year?
I am. So we don't start back until January. Mm. So I'm buzzing about that now. The ladies had their medal presentation last week. Yeah. So it was really nice to see some faces again. And I can't wait now to be back with them as well.
Yeah, because it's a big year for them. They're going for a three in a row. And then also you have for Longford as well, after narrowly missing out on promotion, they're looking to get promoted. That's the big thing for them. Fingers crossed that it'll be a good year for the boys in blue and the girls in blue, and I'm talking about the blue and gold, that is.
Yes, yes, no, definitely. We definitely want that promotion, and you know, we want to kind of take it up another notch from last season. And you know, we started back now a few weeks, and there's definitely that kind of hunger there. And you know, as I said, there's a nice feel, and we're ready to go. And the same with the girls, like they're always wanting to learn, wanting to do better, wanting to improve, and that's really important. From you know, that's all the team are on that kind of buzz. So yeah, I'm sure, like, if it keeps continuing the way it started, hopefully we will reap the rewards now this coming season.
Listen, thank you so much for that, Kate. You really enlightened me, because there was a lot of things that I didn't know, or maybe I was kind of, you know, in the dark about. So it was great having that chat. And listen, best of luck to the two teams that you're involved with. This Sunday, it's also the Leinster Senior Football Club Final. It's a David and Goliath battle. St. Columba's, a small rural club from North County Longford, are up against Kilmacud Crokes, an established club from Dublin. Earlier this year, we interviewed former Cavan footballer Mickey Graham as part of our GAA Old School series. Mickey is the manager of Mullinocht. They're the first Longford club to play in a Leinster Senior Club Final. So they're on the verge of history. And I know I'm being a little bit biased here, but listen, I want to wish Mickey and the Mullinocht lads the very best of luck. Lauren and Kate, thanks so much for the chat. And we will talk to Enda. We're hopefully going to have Enda Sheridan, the Longford ladies manager, on our next show to talk just about football and management in general. So listen to that. So
GemEvents.ie, candy carts, chocolate fountains, selfie mirrors. We've got all your party needs covered at GemEvents.ie. HealthandFitnessIreland.net. We put you back in control of your health, fitness, nutritional and well-being needs through education, advice and motivation. Check out HealthandFitnessIreland.net. Looking to dance the night away? Check out TheLols.ie, the perfect sound for your next wedding, party or function. Great set lists, lively and sure crowd pleasers, thelols.ie.